We're going to talk about post-conviction collateral attacks. As you know, Chapter 11 of the Code of Criminal Procedure divides up the different post-conviction writs into different subsections and has different procedures for each and every one of them. 1107 is final felony conviction. That's what we're going to talk about. If you're doing death writs, there's probably another conference that talks about that for weeks. I would hope there is at least. So let's talk about 1107. 1107 is Article 1107 of the Code of Criminal Procedure. It applies to final felony convictions. It's the exclusive way to challenge a final non-death penalty felony conviction. Those concepts are really important just right there if you're dealing with these cases. Exclusive means you can't do it any other way. Carmen talked about doing some justice on the sly with judges maybe in an 1107-2 context where everybody's holding hands and nobody appeals it. But if a judge tries to undo a final felony conviction some other way, maybe mandamus, maybe some other extraordinary writ, if somebody complains, if the word gets up to the Court of Criminal Appeals, chances are it's going to get undone because the judge didn't have authority to do that because the only way to do it is by 1107. That's why what it means that it's the exclusive avenue. Also, it's unique because these cases, we're not going to talk about return of writs. That's a different matter for pretrial writs, but anytime a final felony writ is filed, it is automatically returnable to the Court of Criminal Appeals. That means it belongs to the court. As soon as it's filed, it's going to come up to the court one way or the other. Final, your conviction has to be final. If there was an appeal, mandate has to have issued. This trips up a lot of inmates. They get the decision, they get the opinion affirming their conviction, and they file their writ. But mandate hasn't issued, the court is going to flush the writ straight away because it's not a final conviction. There's actually a case about what happens when you file it on the same day of mandate. And the bottom line in that case is, by the way, if there's not a time on the file stamp, we're going to presume that mandate issued at 9 o'clock. But that doesn't happen very often. Felony conviction, what does that mean? If your case is final felony conviction, rather, if the case is probated, if your indictment is pending, if it's a misdemeanor, there's another way to do it. It's not 1107. Death cases are 1107-1. You can see on the PowerPoint the different things. Confined on misdemeanor, 1109. Also, as part of all this, you have to allege restraint. You have to be restrained by the conviction in some way for your writ to be a live, viable thing. So if we're looking at a two-year sentence from 1994, you better be talking about what's going on with that conviction that's holding you back in 2019. It's possible you can do it, but you have to allege it, and the courts aren't going to assume that you're still restrained. Now, you just have to say something, basically, is the state of the law. You just have to say that you're restrained by a collateral consequence. We had a case in 2010, Ex parte Harrington, where the judge credited the applicant's claim that he was being denied future employment opportunities by his conviction. That worked. There are other claims in that case that the judge didn't sign off on, but it doesn't mean they couldn't work. If you can't come up with a collateral consequence for a final felony conviction, you got problems, probably. But you do need to allege it. If it's not alleged, the case is going to be dumped. It's going to be dismissed because the sentence is discharged. All right, the bottom line is, for all claims, what kind of claims are we talking about that you can raise? Jurisdictional defects, denials of fundamental constitutional rights, things that affect the duration of your sentence or the fact of your confinement. So you have to bring a claim that's cognizable. One thing that will always invoke Mike's name in these things is his coulda, shoulda, woulda principle. If it's a claim that could have been raised or would have been raised or should have been raised at an earlier point in the litigation, then you're not going to be able to bring it up on habeas. It's not going to be cognizable in general. But, as Carmen said, ineffective assistance is the number one claim, and sometimes you can bootstrap a claim that otherwise wouldn't be cognizable through habeas if you raise it on ineffective assistance. So if you've got a Fourth Amendment claim that the lawyer didn't raise or that the lawyer didn't raise in a competent fashion, you may be able to revive that through ineffective assistance of counsel. There's also classic claims that we've talked about earlier in the day, your Brady claims, your actual innocence claims, false evidence, illegal sentence, illegal confinement. Your bad claims, generally indictment claims, unless you can show there was no jurisdiction. I haven't seen that yet, but it's possible. You can raise sufficiency if you call it no evidence, but you really have to have no evidence. Evidentiary rulings, Fourth Amendment claims, constitutional claims like Confrontation Clause is not going to fly on habeas.